Going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 29, called Explanation of Devotional Service. And I'm going to read verses 22 and 23. This is a part of a very long section from Srimad Bhagavatam. It goes back to Chapter 24, this is 29, it keeps going. Dialogue between Lord Kapila, incarnation of personality of Godhead, and his mother, Devahuti. Kapila Dev is particularly known, as soon as you hear his name spoken commonly, the connection is he taught Sankhya philosophy, the system of Sankhya Yoga, which is from like Gyan Yoga, but it's not. It's the connection. Just like Krishna teaches Sankhya in Chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita, and again, Chapter 13 Bhagavad Gita. It's in so many sections of the Bhagavatam also. So it's helping the practitioner of yoga, of bhakti, to have a very, very clear spiritual conception. We're discussing it just in another section of the Bhagavatam in Chicago. Prahlad Maharaj's instructions to his classmates. See, it's the little section that we're discussing is he's presenting Sankhya to 5-year-old boys in ways, you know, at a level that they can understand. But it's having a spiritual conception is a beginning, even theoretical beginning, and then that leads to other things and leads to other things. In Kapila's teachings, chapter 26, really exhaustive, detailed description of Sankhya, makes your head spin. At the end, he says all of this is to have the soul distinct from matter, focus on the Supreme Soul in meditation. So it leads to dhyan, and dhyan then leads to bhakti. Although, because he's an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he's going to teach bhakti. But to get there, there's thorough Satya Yuga level explanation of matter and spirit distinction. So here in this section, chapter 29, he's continuing, well, chapter 28 is also about devotional service. Kapila's instructions on devotional service. Oh, devotional service and devotional service. An aspect of devotional service is with this spiritual conception, not just in meditation, you think of the super soul or fix your mind upon the super soul, eventually see the super soul. Remember, this is Satya Yuga, just like Dhruva Maharaj, Satya Yuga experience of he fixed his mind on super soul according to Narada's instructions. But then it moved into bhakti, not just meditation. The Supreme Lord came before him. They had their dialogue. He gave the rest of his life in devotional service to Vishnu. He went to Vaikuntha at the end of his life. So, meditation upon the Supreme Lord goes along with your daily activity. Just go back to chapter 26. Kapila Dev, after describing the whole Sankhya system, says, fix your mind upon the Supreme Lord. Chapter 27, he explains how to do that practically. It's not just you sit in meditation from the time that you're born until the time that you die, and that's all you do. There's varieties of activities. He discusses household or life. Very valuable section for those who live in the world with material bodies and with everything that goes with having material bodies. How do you practically practice in Satya Yuga? So those principles of Satya Yuga apply, although it's not the same yuga, so the form is different, but the principle is the same. So now here, in describing devotional service, he's very specific in his discussions with Devahuti. Going back just a few verses, he said, she understands that he's Vishnu. She's not unclear about it. She's very clear about it. There's a whole sequence of establishing that clarity even before he was born. Before she was married, Kardava Muni was visited by Lord Vishnu, who said, I'll appear as your son. And your wife, she's going to come in 2 or 3 days. Swayambhu Mata was going to bring Devahuti, and when the marriage proposal is made, say yes. She'll be a very qualified wife, and I will appear as the son of you and Devahuti. Some time passed, a few thousands of years of serving together in the forest, and an arrangement was made for children. A celestial airplane created by Kardamuni's mystic power was created, and Devahuti became decorated instead of emaciated living in the forest, and 9 daughters were born first. Lord Brahma came during her 10th pregnancy. Brahma indicated these 9 daughters should be given to different sages so they can help create good praja. The child that's within the womb of Devahuti is the Supreme Lord. Brahma confirmed. And then Kapila Dev was born, and he exhibited the symptoms of divinity. So she was, from the very beginning of her dialogue with him, this part that's recorded, chapter 25, she knew seated before her was the personality of Godhead, and she was asking him questions similar, Arjuna and Krishna, similar. Dynamic is different, but it's mother and her son, but she understood him not just as her son, personality of Godhead. So, going back, we're going to read text 22, which is context. He's emphasizing super soul. And then text 20, he uses a metaphor to explain how in Satya Yuga one should practice the teaching that he's given by fixing the mind upon super soul when you're living your practical everyday life. The metaphor is a breeze that's blowing. He calls it a chariot of air. It gathers aroma from different sources, and it carries those fragrances, bad smells and good smells, carried by the chariot of air. Similarly, it's a comparison. Similarly, one who is constantly engaged in devotional service can catch the super soul who is equally present everywhere. Nice purport, but the explanation that he's offering, that the process, the practice, the meditation is you're engaged in devotional service, and everywhere is the super soul, just like the wind is blowing and everywhere there's fragrance of something, fragrance of flowers or fragrance of garbage or fragrance of the sea air or fragrance of the earth or something. And the air carries fragrances. So a person practicing devotional service, as they're moving along in life, they should catch up this tattva, this reality, that super soul is situated everywhere. It's how we should practice devotional service. So then he goes a little more deeply into the subject. The next verse, 21, he says to Devahuti, I am present in every living entity as the super soul. Imagine having a conversation with a person who's declaring, I'm in everyone's heart as super soul. I mean, the fact that Kapila Dev appeared as the son of Devahuti had so much to do with her bhakti. She and Kardamamuni had parental affection towards the Supreme Lord. He reciprocated and he appeared as their son. But now he's saying to her, I'm situated in everyone's heart as super soul. If someone neglects or disregards that super soul everywhere and engages himself in the worship of the deity in the temple, that is simply imitation. It leads up to what this verse is. So there's practice. The practice of deity worship. This is Satya Yuga. And there was deity worship. There was chanting of, you know, the different primary means for achieving spiritual perfection for different yugas. Doesn't mean in Satya Yuga they didn't chant, or in Satya Yuga they didn't engage in deity worship, they just did meditation. You follow? Point? In each of the four yugas, there's a primary means for achieving spiritual perfection. So if in Satya Yuga the primary means is meditation, doesn't mean they didn't chant the Kali Yuga primary means, or they didn't engage in deity worship, the Dwarpa Yuga primary means of achieving perfection, or they didn't engage in Yajna, because that's the Treta Yuga process. They're present all the time, just like today. The chanting of the holy name is the primary means we engage in deity worship. And there are procedures of sacrifice that we engage in. We don't ignore them. They're accompanied with the chanting of the holy name. And within the mantras that are used for making offerings, the chanting of the holy name, the names are there within the mantras themselves. So, deity worship without honoring the presence of super soul everywhere is simply imitation. Now, some of you are probably a little familiar with the nomenclature of Kanishtha Adhikari, Majjhima Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari, or beginning, intermediate, and advanced stages of bhakti. So he's now describing the beginning stage. One of the Sanskrit terms is prakrita bhakta, materialistic devotee. And the materialistic devotee, or the Kanishtha Adhikari, not just, you know, from Vedic perspective, any religion, God is in the place of worship. So the church, or the mosque, or the synagogue, or the temple, different religions call the place of worship by different names. God's there. So you go to be in this holy place where God is, and you're very, you know, it's a sacred place, and you're very religious. And then when you leave the church or the mosque or synagogue, it's, or something else. So you're very reverential and respectful, and then you leave, and then it's a secular conception. God's over here, and then there's my worldly life over there. Kapila Deva is indicating one of the major distinctions between the beginning and the more advanced, and then the superlatively advanced person, is how they regard super soul. Because he's everywhere. It's not just in the church and temple. He makes the argument in reverse. Some people say, why do you worship the deity? God is everywhere. So the reverse is, well, if he's everywhere, then he's in the deity. Touché. Why do you object that we worship the deity? In fact, it's an authorized form of worshiping. Although he's everywhere, we don't have the capacity to see, so he mercifully manifests himself as the deity. And he's there in the deity. Just have this very transcendentally wonderful experience of a Radhakrishna deity installation in central New Jersey, Plainfield, New Jersey. And a few of us were directly involved, behind the closed curtain, where the organizer of the event is assisting us in the pran pratishtha with the mantras, and touching the different parts of the deity's body with kusa grass, and while mantras are being chanted, to invite the Supreme Lord to come and reside according to different names, different parts of the body, and so forth. So that's formal. It's not like you can't have a deity unless you do that formal. But the deity form is Krishna. The deity form of Krishna is Krishna. The deity form of Radharani is Radharani. We hear that, but something happened just over the Janmashtami weekend. We just observed Janmashtami. One of the pujaris told me, I'll reserve their name, but they were taking their service was Gornatai, and that they were taking the clothes from Gornatai to put them in their evening dress. The clothes were soaked with perspiration. They thought maybe they were imagining something. So they brought to another devotee, another pujari, and had them. It was very hot on Janmashtami evening, and the clothes were wet with perspiration. So the devotee wrote a little note to me saying, theoretically I understood, I was with faith engaging in deity worship. It's a whole other experience now. So to see the deity and worship the deity, this verse 21, without recognizing super soul is everywhere, it's the reverse of the deity. Within the deity is Krishna. But Krishna is within everything. So if one worships the deity but doesn't recognize and then conduct oneself according to the fact that super soul is situated within the heart of not only other human beings but every living thing, then that worship is imitation. It's not like a zero, but it's not matured. It's imitation. And what Prabhupada writes, he speaks of the topmost stage. So this is the bottom stage, and then the intermediate stage, and then the topmost stage. In purified consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, one sees the presence of Krishna everywhere. The message here is that if therefore one only engages in deity worship in the temple and does not consider other living entities, then he is in the lowest grade of devotional service. One who worships the deity in the temple and does not show respect to others is a devotee on the material platform in the lowest stage of devotional service. That's the previous verse. The devotee should try to understand everything in relationship with Krishna and try to serve everything in that spirit. Now, we can't pretend or imitate that, but we can cultivate that consciousness. That's bhakti. We cultivate what's favorable to Krishna, pleasing to Krishna. So it's not just Krishna, but it's all living entities within whom Krishna is situated as his expansion of Paramatma. So that's the background to know two verses. Text 22. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples, but does not know that the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. Now, mantras are effective even without offering. But the purpose in a Vedic sacrifice, you know, particularly a Vaishnava Vedic sacrifice, is the fire, although it says it's one of the five material elements, when duly sanctified, the fire acts like the tongue of Vishnu, and he receives the offerings of ghee and grain into the fire. Maybe some of you have read Brihat Bhagavatamrita? No? Anyone? Brihat Bhagavatamrita, printed by the BBT. It's written by Sanatana Goswami, and part of that Brihat Bhagavatamrita, one of the things it does, is it describes the journey of Gopa Kumar. He's the main person. It's a good name. He's a cowherd boy, a young boy that was born and grew up in Vrindavan, and that was his name, Gopa Kumar. Nice name. And he received a mantra from this very attractive, mystical personality. Didn't even know the guru's name, but he was very attracted to him. And Gopa Kumar requested initiation from him. He gave him initiation in the form of a mantra, Gopal mantra, Madan Gopal mantra. And he went on a quest to find Madan Gopal. That's the storyline. And so, in so doing, he, while chanting his mantra, something like Narada Muni when singing the names of the Supreme Lord, he was able to travel throughout the whole universe and beyond the universe, and eventually made it to Goloka. And one of the places that he stopped was Maharloka. So there's 14 planetary systems, 7 lower, 7 upper. So we know from Gayatri Mantra, Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, and Svargaloka, which means there's 4 more. And the one that's just above, so above heaven, is Maharloka. It's described really nice in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Gopa Kumar goes there, and he sees it's a place where there's householders, who they're not attracted to family life, but they're householders, they're married, but they're attracted to sacrifice, worship of Vishnu by offering oblations into the fire. And Gokul Kumar was watching them, and as they were offering oblations into the fire, Lord Vishnu appeared and extended his hands to receive whatever it was that they offered. So they did these really long yagyas because they wanted to see the form of Lord Vishnu receiving their offerings. It's a very nice painting illustrating this. And when the yagya was over, Lord Vishnu would recede. So they hurry up and got ready for the next yagya because they wanted his darshan. So that's Maharloka. And then here in Bhuloka, people do yagyas, and they don't see Lord Vishnu extending his hands to receive their offerings. But, you know, in principle, he's receiving their offerings. That's the fire. So the message here is, where there's offering of oblations, but there's no fire, it's just ashes. And Swaha into ashes. There's no benefit. So the comparison is being made to deity worship, which is accompanied with mantras. So it's the deity instead of the fire, but the deity worship where one does not recognize that super soul is within and therefore offer respect to others because super soul is within. Then there's not a proper understanding of life or the world around you, and so it's materialistic. And the interest of such a materialistic devotee, a person that goes to the mosque and offers whatever they do when they go to mosques, or goes to the church and offers whatever they do when they go to the church or the temple. Temple's not just Vedic, it's, you know, Jewish faith consider their place of worship a temple, etc., etc. It's the beginning stage. God is being recognized, but the scope is materialistic. It's wanting elevation to a better position in this life and after this life. Largely, it's like a pyramid. Largely, the base of the pyramid is much bigger than the upper portions of the pyramid. We're just speaking of the top of the pyramid. And so the distinction between, you know, the beginning or the materialistic category of devotee is, one way is to say it is not respecting other living entities. Or say it the other way is, why respect other living entities? Because the Supreme Lord is there. Just like they, you know, one may respect the place of worship because God is there. Yes. And so on top there's a cross, or there's a crescent, or there's a chakra, or there's a Star of David, or there's something to say, you know, inside God is. But God is inside everyone. One of the explanations that, if you're ever asked by people, you know, what's that mark on your forehead? Tilak? The answer, the response that I like very much is, it means, it marks the body as a temple of God. It means God's inside. And we put that marking to remind ourselves, God's inside. He's not only inside me, he's inside everyone. But this is to remind us, God's inside. This is the temple of God. And because it's the temple of God, I should treat it accordingly. Stuff doesn't go inside the temple unless it's holy or sacred. It doesn't come out of the body unless it's holy or sacred. So we treat the body that way. When people hear that, they my experience is they go, oh, that's very nice. Then they go on to the next thing. But so to live one's life that way, it carries one to the next stage, next level of bhakti, or next level of elevated consciousness, without respect to other living entities. How are you going to progress? God's there in the holy name, but he's not in the heart of other living beings. Kapila Deva is making this teaching very clear. He says it again in the next verse for emphasis sake. Text 23. One who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others and is therefore a separatist never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. If you're not respectful to other living entities, what's the default position? You know, at best it's neutral, but it's then disrespect. And even when there is the other kind of respect, it has to do with... You made a very nice point last night in the discussion. To get away from selfishness, how do you get away from selfishness if you take the self out? What's something else has to go in the middle? So if you don't put Krishna in the middle, then you have selfishness. If this will, you know, forwards or backwards. So that respect to other living entities, there has to be a basis for it, not just a sentiment, because otherwise I respect you as long as you act favorably according to my standard of what's favorable, then I'll respect you. And if you don't act according to what my standard of favorable to me is, there goes the respect. It's duality. It's this world is a place of duality. So how do you get to transcendence? Something else has to go in the middle besides, you know, what I think is so suitable or appropriate or favorable to me. The fact that super soul is situated within. We had this very nice experience in Mayapur. Remember very clearly, 1975. We had a Mayapur festival. Prabhupada called it Mayapur Vrindavan Festival because the devotees came from all around the world, and sometime in Mayapur, sometime in Vrindavan. And that particular year, there was a Mayavadi sannyasi that was coming to visit the temple every day. Very clear, you know, with markings of a Mayavadi sannyasi. So the devotees asked Prabhupada, what do we do? Because he's a sannyasi. But he's a Mayavadi. So what should we do? And Prabhupada's answer was, you offer respect. Don't intimately associate, but when you, as with a sannyasi, you see a sannyasi, you offer obeisance as you pay respect. Just don't hear from him. Don't intimately associate with him. On one level, it's culture. You offer respect. Because just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas, knowing that cultured people will honor sannyasi because he's a sannyasi. And that will they receive benefit instead of criticizing him because they didn't understand his level of consciousness, right? It was he accepted sannyas for that reason, to deliver the persons who were criticizing him instead of getting a negative reaction. They would offer respect to him because he's a sannyasi. That's on the cultural side. Then this is transcendental teaching. Super soul's within. So we should respect any living entity, but to speak of one who is striving to detach themselves from worldliness and become situated beyond worldliness. That's the mind body. We offer respect. No harm. We don't intimately associate. We respect. And then, you know, there's the world that we live in. And then there's the community of Vaishnavas amongst the world that we live in. I was visiting on Labor Day in Milwaukee. A nice gathering of devotees there. And during the question and answer session of one of the programs, somebody said, you know, the classic, I get irritated by certain behaviors from the devotees. Of course, that probably never happens here or anything like that, but it does happen sometimes. And it's like our mood. We can't lose respect, because otherwise we're in this prakriti situation. We won't become elevated. So we respect that here's individuals like me. They have super soul within. They have some devotion to Krishna within. And they're less than perfect, like me. And I didn't know that until I started associating with them. I could have guessed it, but they're less than perfect, like me. And now we're associating together, and there may be some irritation. Some things are okay, some things rumpy. I feel irritated. That's my problem. And that shouldn't change the position of respect and then the position of rendering service. Just like within a family. Family members don't consider, well, wait a minute, he or she has a, or one of the children, they've got this thing that they do. You know, I don't like that thing, so, you know, get out of the house. Do that. They're part of the family. And if progressive Krishna conscious families will sort those things out based upon higher principles of consciousness and assist one another in a mood of loving dealings to help one go beyond something that they're stuck on. So as with family, so a community of devotees. And then, you know, there's beyond the community of devotees. But if there's a failure, according to Kapila Dev, if there's a failure to respect because super soul is there, where does that leave you? Judgmentalism and exploitation. You know, the same thing with selfishness. You're prakriti bhakta. And one of the phrases in this verse, text 23, that appears as a refrain in this chapter is a separatist. Bina darshana. We know what darshan means. Bina darshan. Seeing separate. Seeing separate is there's Krishna and then there's this world. But the world is not separate from Krishna. Material consciousness is seeing separate from Krishna. Like Krishna disappears. And he's not, you know, if he disappears, things are up for grabs. I can make it mine. Not seeing separate is everything belongs to Krishna. The Ishopanishad first mantra. Isavashamidam sarvam. Krishna is the Isha, And he's the Isha of everything. He's the controller and proprietor of everything. Supposing I don't know who the proprietor of something is. Maybe I can make it mine. We enter into this world not knowing the proprietor. We're very busy making things ours without honoring who it really belongs to. If we can honor who it belongs to and accept that there's something that's meant for my maintenance and well-being coming from the proprietor, that's bhakti. The Yashopanishad says, Kurva Nevaha Karmani. You can live long life and happy life. And so this is saying you'll never be peaceful if you don't see people and things, because both spirit and matter come from Krishna. So don't see the connection with Krishna. It's bina darshana, or separatist. Now, separatist, just by the regular use of that term in English language, is not complimentary. Separatist. Like, you know, somebody that's got their arms folded across their chest saying, forget it, man. I'm going my own way. Heck with you guys. Separatist. And that, depending upon the mode of nature, can be, you know, a militant separatist. Like this term they use in the media these days, the rebels with their guns and rebel forces. I militantly a separatist. Or you can be mildly a separatist, but separatist. The root of it is not seeing, according to Kapila's teaching here, not seeing Supersoul. And not seeing Supersoul, then not respecting. Not respecting is trying to own or control or eliminate if it doesn't match my sensibilities. Then you get, you know, material life. So above that is a devotional life, and above the beginning stage of devotional life, you go to the place of worship and you worship whatever the system of worship is. One last thing. Something that goes along with this materialistic mentality where you don't see and thus respect other living beings, see Supersoul within and thus respect other living beings, the process of hearing and chanting Shravanam Kirtanam is kind of like unimportant. Living in a temple, it's very, very obvious when there are persons who are materialistic. We have experience that we're having class and some people want to come in and worship the deity because that's it, it's the deity. And they'll walk right through the middle of the devotees that are having class, like we don't even exist. And they'll go and, you know, place something on the altar and say their prayers like we're not even in the room, etc. And then walk right through the assembly of devotees here in class like it's zero. I had this the first lesson in this that I distinctly recall was the first year we went to Mayapur for the Mayapur Vrindavan festival. Achyutananda, then it was Achyutananda Swami, was there. Very famous personality, fantastic singer, brilliant wit, was capable of translating Bengali songs into English. He was like this, you know, amazing personality. So a group of us maybe 100, then that was like a big group, went from the Radha Madhava temple through what is now all built up, but then it was just agricultural fields. And we had, you know, had to walk on those little rows that's in between this rice paddy and that rice paddy, you know, demarking where the agricultural field, and there is Chutananda singing and singing. And then every now and then there was like other patches of land where we could all gather around him. And we went all the way to Kolavichar Sridhar's place. If you're familiar with being in Mayapur, it's quite a distance. We were having a blast. Because the mood was, this is Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan party going to sing the names of Krishna throughout the land. That was the mood. It was fantastic. We were so joyful. And he knew, because he had lived in Mayapur, where Kolavichar Sridhar's place is. He's a very important personality in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And he lived in a banana grove, and he took banana flowers and banana leaves to make leaf cups and things like that. That was his livelihood, but he was very poor. So now there's a place, like a structure, where was the, you know, the place of Kolavichar Sridhar. When we take, you know, now it's thousands of devotees to go on Prikrama. There's something to show where that was. So prior to what's there now, Bhaktisiddhanta had established this is the place. And he did so just by like a 1 foot by 1 foot square column. And then something on the top, like a little, I mean, the size of a birdhouse, very small, and inside were Gaura-Thai deities. So we came with this joyful kirtan right to, and sat down on the ground, and kirtan ended, and Vichutananda started speaking about the glories of Kolavichar Sridhar. And then off in the distance was a house, and a man saw all these Western devotees sitting there by this little shrine for Kolavichar Sridhar. And he came running out with his RT paraphernalia and had a big bell and started clanging the big bell in the middle of the class of Achyutananda. He said something in really sharp tone in Bengali, and the man was shocked because he knew Bengali, and he's a tiger. He would lace into people, no problem. And then to us, he said, this is a classic Kanishtha mentality. No sense of the value of Harikatha, no sense of the value of Kirtan, just the deity. Ring the bell, we should worship the deity. The value of the hearing and chanting, we're being prepared to enter into that respecting super soul within all living beings through the medium of hearing and chanting. But those that don't have that understanding of the value of hearing and chanting is just the deity or the place of worship. That's it. The Krishna isn't seen everywhere. So that which helps us to see Krishna everywhere is sections of the Bhagavatam like this. And then, so that's the theory, then comes the practice of the theory. We should respect. And sometimes that's a challenge. When people do bad things, it's how do you respect? As a teenager, I had an existential problem, because in the Bible, it teaches the same thing. And I struggled with it. The teaching is, love thy neighbor as thyself. I remember as a teenager having a big problem. Lots of people that do very unlovable things, and how am I supposed to love them? I'm a failure. I don't love them. And the difficulty, when I became a devotee, it worked out, because you have to love the bad behavior. Bad behavior is bad behavior. But the individual soul as part of Krishna. It's in previous verses. Krishna is there as the super soul, and Krishna is also there as his expansion, part and parcel expansion, as the living entity. So, double there. We have to see that. And then we can, love has its place. And if you don't have love doesn't have its place, then you have this struggle situation. Especially in Kali Yuga, where culture is gone, or going, almost gone. Vestiges of culture remain, and that's about it. And for a person who values culture, it's irritating. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains an advanced devotee is one who extends themselves to others and gives this opportunity for understanding the soul, and understanding respect should go to the soul and super soul, even for people who are ruffians, not gentle. Hare Krishna. Any comments or discussion? Yes.
About respecting or loving others, there are two ways, both of which you mentioned. One is that the parts and parcels of Krishna are dear to Krishna, so we offer our love and respect to them. The other is that because super soul resides in everyone's body. With the second one, I sometimes struggle because I feel that it tends to become impersonal a bit, because you focus on the super soul and then you tend to forget the person, like the soul itself.
So both. Why not both? That's what's in the purports of this section. Both. The super soul's a person too.
How do you basically approach a person thinking about both the super soul and the soul?
God is within. There's divinity within. The soul may have turned his attention away from Krishna, but that Krishna is within. So, God is within.
I can give an example.
Yeah, okay.
The common action that you offer,
obeisances. It's both. The training that I received is you're offering obeisances to super soul within, but that's not impersonal because super soul is within you. My obeisances. the individual soul is within the heart, according to the second canto Bhagavatam, and the super soul is within the individual soul. A godbrother of mine told me, he asked Prabhupada this question. Prabhupada, it says that the living entity is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair, and super soul is 8 inches. So how is the super soul inside the heart of the individual soul? Won't fit, in other words. And then Prabhupada's answer was, what is the difficulty? So he thought that Prabhupada didn't understand his question, so he asked it again later. Prabhupada gave him the same answer. Transcendental is not limited by time and space. Time and space is limited. Transcendental is not limited. So that the individual soul, that personal, has super soul within. That's glorious. Not impersonal. So we're offering obeisances. If you can recognize offering obeisances to the soul, to the person, don't forget super soul within the heart of the person. And he's a person. Supreme person. that it requires the adjustment is the spiritual conception of life. You know, the spiritual conception of life. How is it that Vrindavan the entire Goloka is within Vrindavan? Goloka is the largest spiritual planet amongst the whole Vaikuntha planet. How is it? You know, the measurements don't work. But it's not a problem. And this idea our acharyas describe, it's just expanding on the notion of don't use material calculation to value or try to measure spiritual reality. And they can give other examples. Yeah.
So, Maharaj, like as you told, like when you put tilak and somebody asks you, you say like,
Timlak marks the body as a temple of God.
Yeah, temple of God. Something. So people might confuse that, like I am God, you are God, everyone is God.
So you elaborate. I don't just stop there. So just like when you're driving along or walking along the street and you see there's a building that has a cross on the top. You know, that's a church. So similarly, this means the body is a temple and inside, place of God. So we treat the body accordingly. Place of God. Not that I'm God. Or the place of worship, the church or the synagogue or the temple is impersonal God. Okay?
The temple is the
place.
Yeah,
the body is the place. And inside the place.
Okay. And inside the temple, like God is also there and devotees are also there. So similarly, inside the body also. The
yeah.
Body is there.
Yeah. Yes.
So initially the class mentioned that other devotee had a very clear conception
yes.
of the Lord. So for us, when the conception is not clear of the Lord or spiritual master, how does it work out?
How does it work out? Very partly cloudy. our consciousness is not clear. Our conceptions are theoretical or notional, but only, and they have to be applied. Then it becomes gyana, then big gyana. But when we don't have even proper knowledge, or not proper application of that knowledge, then our realization is limited, and our consciousness will be cloudy. That's the meaning of the English translation of this word anartha. It's cloud or mist. And clouds or mist, they obfuscate or they block the fullness of the light of the sun. So that's the condition. How did it work? It's like that within the heart there's anarthas. Now we think of anarthas, we're accustomed to thinking of anarthas as some, you know, something that's dirty or bad or literally unwanted, artha and anartha. But the more literary meaning of anartha, one of them is it's like clouds or mist. Vishwanath Chakravarti describes like that. Like the sky has clouds and blocks the rays of the sun. So within the heart there may be anarthas. And then anarthas arise from these things. So what to do? We engage in devotional practice, striving to have the proper, just like he's saying here, to have the proper understanding. Someone is not expected that someone who's beginning bhakti, or, you know, right away as the intermediate stage, they start at the beginning. They start at, you know, God's in the place of worship, or in the temple, or the mosque, or the synagogue. God is there. And like this question about, you know, acting, last night's question, one of last night's questions, acting in relation to God and relation to Krishna. So some of the fruits of our earnings are given. So giving contributions at a church or temple or synagogue, that's common. But then one may also do the same for people in general. Specifically, it's mentioned as prasada distribution or distributing books, transcendental knowledge. And so to do that, it may cost something. We use our earnings for such costs, so conducting festivals and reaching out to the public and so forth. Because it's what madhyamas are supposed to do, what to speak of. Than Uttamas. Looks like we're done. Srila Prabhupada Ki.